What did you feel when you heard it?
Well, I think it was almost a sort of disbelief, because I'd never actually heard gunfire in that close proximity, and where the gunfire was actually a result of, you know, violence or people shooting at other people. One of the people that was shot actually did pass away at about 4 o'clock this morning. There were 8 shots total. One person got hit 5 times, another person got hit 3 times. I'm still not desensitized to that yet, and I didn't have enough, you know, mental time to totally digest it. But now that I'm talking about it, it is pretty frightening. You know, my students don't live in Marks, but there are similar outbreaks of violence and fights and things like that that go on in these communities in the Mississippi Delta, and oftentimes with poverty there comes this violence. And so it's kind of like the first taste of what that actually looks like for me as a teacher who hasn't had those sorts of experiences, coming into an area where that is more ingrained or more natural or more common. So it's interesting, because I had those expectations to be exposed to that, but I never knew actually what it would feel like until it was that close to me, and it really was that close to me. When you go through something like this, it's like, wow, okay, you know, I was that close to bullets hitting flesh. It puts things in perspective.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, definitely.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
the closest thing I have to a friend for miles.
The podcast about
the unknown.
Part 2 of 2.
I was 27 days in, and I started to feel longing in my bones. I decided that it was time to head home, real home, back to Washington. But before I left town, I stopped for a kitty cone of soft-serve ice cream at a fast food restaurant. A police officer was finishing up his lunch when I walked in. He saw my backpack and said, "Hey, come take a load off."
"Look who's here."
I sat down with him, and we chatted a bit, and I eventually asked him about the shooting the night before. He confirmed what I already knew, and he said, "You were the guy with the camera, weren't you?" I told him yes. And I told him about my trip, my fears, and the start of a long journey home. In response, he offered me a piece of advice that I'd heard many times before. He said, "You know, that's a dangerous game, and just be careful out there." A lot of people asked me about the safety of hitchhiking, and I'd learned to answer that question very carefully, because violence is an emotional topic, like gun control or abortion or parenting, that conversations about seem only to entrench people deeper in their own beliefs. I used to tell people about the historically low rates of violent crime in this country, explaining that, from a physical perspective, hitchhiking is about as safe as it's ever been. But instead, I started framing the conversation like this. I would say, "You know, I've always kind of been this reserved, complacent person, shy, timid, introverted, etc. So I took this trip because I realized that it was becoming far too easy for me to spend an entire day sitting in front of a computer screen without ever realizing or appreciating the people who care about me. My biggest fear is that I turn into one of those sitcom archetypes of middle age, someone whose bar for the status quo is set so low that life's important bits go by unnoticed. So I do really appreciate your concerns for my safety, but I really see 2 possible outcomes here. The first is the life that I'm used to, the life of complacency, and the second involves my thumb and a road and a chance of physical danger. But at the end of the day, I find that first option to be the terrifying one, and that latter option to be a powerful lesson waiting to be learned." Of course, I didn't say it quite like that when I was sitting there in that restaurant talking to the officer, but really, that's what I meant to say. I hitched from Mississippi to Arkansas. Another friend from high school picked me up, and I stayed with him in Fayetteville for a night. The next morning, as I was walking down the highway towards an on-ramp, a man in a truck pulls up next to me and says, "Hey kid, you need some work?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I'll give you some money to off the dog and the goat." I hopped in the truck hoping this was a euphemism for something. It was. I worked at that carnival for 3 days, blowing up balloons and trying to get people on the midway to pay $5 for 3 throws of a dart, or $10 for 7. I tried desperately and unsuccessfully to become a charismatic salesperson on the spot. A gruff and incredibly deliberate woman named Ellen supervised me, and she was constantly disappointed by my poor salesmanship. I just knew that she didn't like me. But she also asked around and found me a private bunk in the back of one of the trailers to sleep in. But when I walked away from that fairground 3 days later, I counted the wad of cash in my hands and found that Ellen had intentionally overpaid me by a good margin.
I think I mentioned in the last diary about how strange it is to be able to have such harsh transitions, where one day I'm surrounded by people and today I don't get a ride. I'm not surrounded by anything. I think it's gonna work out. We'll see how it goes. Getting up on the gas station here. I'm gonna try and fill up my water bottle because it's empty right now. Feels good to have a pack back on my shoulders though. It really does.
A few days and a few rides later, I found myself in the town of Newton, Kansas. The sun was declaring its end to a long and a hot afternoon. The orange light around me was fading into the rich blue of twilight, and I realized that my hitchhiking day was done. I ate a bit of dinner, probably apples and carrots and bread and trail mix, and then, as I was looking for a place to sleep, I noticed that there was a cemetery near the highway. So I walked amongst the gravestones and took long exposures with my camera. I eventually made it over to the edge of the cemetery grounds, where a tall tree would hide me partly as I unrolled my sleeping pad. I noticed a surprising amount of harmless pill bugs scurrying across the ground all around me, and they took little notice. That night, I had this really strange dream where people were standing all around me, just milling about. I asked a couple of them for rides to Colorado, and they looked at me and said, "Oh, actually, sorry, we can't drive you. We're here for something else entirely." The pillbugs were still crawling around me, working busily in the dim cemetery. Pillbugs are decomposers, after all. They eat dead things. I rested really well that night. Early the next morning, an older hog farmer named Gordon picked me up. A quiet man, he was wearing a really strange smile on his face. And as I got into the cab of his pickup, he said, "You know, I've never really picked up a hitchhiker before." And I believed him, because over the top of his bench seat in his truck was a custom-made seat protector. The driver's seat had a slot cut for his seatbelt, and where mine should have been was just a solid piece of cloth. I always wondered if I was the first passenger to have ever ridden in his truck, and for the moment I wasn't really sure whether to feel somehow guilty or somehow honored. He was on his way home from morning devotion. The lesson that day was about Jesus caring for the needy. Gordon started smiling as he told me this. As he pulled over to drop me off, out came his wallet, along with this little religious card and a $50 bill. He looked me squarely in the eye and said, "I really want you to have these." Whose is it?
My friend Nate's.
Why do you have it? I wound up connecting with Evan, an old friend of mine, in Denver, Colorado, where I stayed for a full week. We did a ton of different things and had a lot of fun, but just before I was about to leave, he sang me this song that, I don't know why, but it just seemed significant.
And I walk the path ahead, oh, in my mind, through marble floors and steel skylines, whoa. Can I retrace my steps over a month before? Up, up, up to the highest floor to find the closest thing I have to a friend for miles. With a sigh, my body gives and breaks down. I sink a K into the couch and gaze into the city's endless concrete maze. I say to friend, I leave tonight, one more day here. Oh, just my, just my, just my, kill me. Like Bangkok's always said it will. My friend says with a glance at his watch, oh, it's nearly 12 o'clock. The sun is tearing through the sky, and it's time to hit the park. Suppose I'll follow you, 'cause I have nothing else to do.
So it's about 8 o'clock p.m., August 29th, 2011. Fast forward 10 days, and there I was, walking up that highway in the fading light, towards that redwood grove that seemed like it would make such a good camping spot.
It's gotten quite dark out now. I've been getting antsy to get back home, and I know they say that you shouldn't think about your destination when you hitchhike, and you think about the journey. I'm really ready to get back. That's all I can say. There's things about me that have changed, but a lot that stayed the same. Don't know what either of those things are, though. I spend a lot of time wondering what people will say when they see me again. How I've changed. A little bit rough around the edges looking. I hope they say that I stand up straighter. I hope they see me as a little bit more confident, a little bit less wishy-washy. It's not that I want to pretend to be invulnerable. I mostly want to be someone that people can trust. I worry that complacency and excuses about there being not enough time to do the things I need to do will enter my mind again. I worry that I'll fall back into my old habits of laziness, of taking the easier option, even when the most interesting option is beating down the door.
I walked past this dog that just barked incessantly at me. I did my best to ignore it, and I got to thinking, and at that time, I didn't know that I was only 3 days from being home, but I did know that the fears that had plagued me prior to my departure were slowly but surely ebbing away. I finally got to that grove, but I realized that something was wrong. I wasn't the first person to think of this as a camping spot. There was trash on the ground, mostly empty food containers, plastic bags, that sort of thing. But it was too late to find another spot, so I rolled out my pad in the most secluded place I could find. The that night, as I was lying in that redwood grove, surrounded by the blackest black I'd seen in a long time, I heard that dog barking again, and I was afraid. I remember how that dog barked the same way when I walked by it earlier. Someone must have seen me walk by. Someone must be out on the road, just waiting to come up and kill me. It was an irrational fear. I know that now, but I'm not immune to those, and when you're out in the woods with a dead cell phone, things are a bit different. So instinctively, I reached up to my neck to make sure that Mike's necklace was still there. It was, and that comforted me slightly. It took just about everything I had to calm myself back down, to slow my heart rate down, and realize that unfounded fears could no longer be the master of me. I don't know how I did it, but eventually I did fall asleep, and no murderer ever came. The next morning, I got picked up almost immediately by a woman who said that the only reason she pulled over was because her kid told her to, and so I rode with them for the better part of the day. When they dropped me off in Portland, just directly south of the Washington-Oregon border, I noticed that things were finally starting to look familiar again. I went to Powell's bookstore, where, as a teenager, I had once dug through almost every single photography book on the shelves. So I checked my backpack and walked upstairs and started rifling through the stacks of books again until I found this book of Nan Golden's photography, and its binding was broken, so I bought it with plans to fix it up and give it to my girlfriend. It was like $10. It was night when I left the store, and I started walking up towards this park on the hill where I could camp for the night, and suddenly I met this man who kind of changed my life a little bit. His name was Puke.
My name is Puke, aka I don't give a fuck. It's like every time I talk about shit, it always goes the wrong way, and I'm trying to start a new section of my life. Yep, sleeping in a park in the woods. Well, a couple days ago, I was sitting on the street during a street fair. I saw this beautiful lady, and I said, "Hi, I'm single and I work out. Want to go homeless with me?" She thought I was adorable, and she told me that she wanted me to come over so she'd give me a sponge bath. So I started walking back to her house, and I get downtown, and I run into some kids. "Oi, train rider, you want to schwill with some real train riders? Let's go get drunk and go under a bridge, train rider, hardcore train rider, this and that." After a while, this kid starts yelling at me and start saying that I was put a hit out on his girlfriend, and he kicked me in the head a couple times. Got robbed, my hat, my rag, and a couple vials of L, whatever. Money. Doesn't matter, it's just money and shit. I don't need it anyways. That kind of put an eye-opening experience on me. I've been traveling for 3 years, quit for a little bit, left 4 years ago, be free again, and this was kind of like the last straw of everything. And I got stomped and eventually walked up to the lady's house, and she helped me out a lot. We sat there and talked, and I just started thinking, I need to release a bunch of energy. I need to get rid of it. I need to be a new person. So I told her that I was going to change myself, and she was going to help me, but I told her that I had to change it in a different way. So, I ripped out two of my dreadlocks for her, because I always promised myself if I ever got rid of my dreads, I would rip them out, because, you get pain to learn, and the pain helps get away the negative energy, I guess. Well, at least for me. I guess that makes me a sadist. Yeah, I ripped out a few dreads for her, and we kept having conversation, we kept talking, we smoked a few bowls, and then I gave her a knife and told her to cut my hair out, and she cut off all my dreads, drew me a bubble bath, and released me of all my negative energies. We snuggled up, and we slept till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. For the longest time, I thought I was meant to be a traveler and live for free, but my life isn't worth dying because I want to live for free. I mean, it is, but to be bludgeoningly murdered for freedom and to live life the way I want to is not what I want to do. And I realized that maybe this wasn't the life for me and it wasn't the life that I needed. And it took 4 years of it to do this, but I can, you know, go to school and learn about permaculture and sustainability and, you know, feed people and do what I want to do to help change the world. It's going to be hard. It's going to be really f***ing hard.
We camped together in the park that night, and in the morning, while he was still working on waking up, I was feeling kind of antsy, so I gave him a pair of my hiking socks and walked down to a coffee shop where I wrote for a couple hours. And it was at this moment, sitting in that coffee shop, just thinking about camping in a park with a homeless man named Puke, that I realized exactly how far I'd come from the timid person I was just 50 days before. It had finally happened. I had finally faced my fear of strangers. I spent that last night in Seattle with a friend, and then the next afternoon, I caught my last ride back up to Bellingham. By this point, my pack had molded so strongly to my back that I hardly noticed it as I picked it up for the last time and walked up the steps to a front door I hadn't seen in 2 months. That was when the anticlimax really hit me.
Hey.
I felt cheated or guilty or some emotion that really doesn't have a word. I felt like the trip was supposed to be about me, about my adventures, my struggles, my learning. And why didn't just everyone put their life on hold while I was gone? It was childish, I know.
Was it wonderful?
You see, it's strange to travel in solitude. It's strange to realize that you'll never have someone to laugh about the shared stories, or to correct you when you miss a detail. All you have are the notes, the photos, the sounds, the memories, but never that conversation. And so, over the next few weeks, I blundered in and out of lucidity. The phrase that my girlfriend and I used for this phenomenon was feeling out of sorts. We wound up ending that relationship a month after my return. Sometimes people change, and sometimes that's hard to cope with. I saw a preacher's vision of hell, a Hicks view of the end times, a drunken man's violent idea of how to solve a problem, Wild Pigeon's vision of a cave, and a train rider's vision for the future. It all seemed so surreal because, traveling through each passing story, I saw the magical thinking that flows through the veins of America. The problem is that even after 50 days on the road, 50 rides from complete strangers, I still didn't believe in magic, whether it's burning in hell or being protected by a bit of copper twisted into a necklace. But there were these moments when someone would say to me, they'd say, "Come over to my house and I'll cook you some sloppy joes and coleslaw." And that was when I realized that there was true value in the magic I don't believe in. And it was these moments, out on the road, when I experienced the true American identity. The The Here Be Monsters podcast is a growing community of producers and artists and musicians and thinkers oriented towards following fears and the unknown and just about anything that's confusing or interesting. If you like the show, just remember that it's free. It's always going to be that way. It isn't free to make, but right now there's this really awesome offer happening over on the Here Be Monsters website for anyone who's interested in helping support the show and also interested in getting something out of it, too. So when I got back from this hitchhiking trip, I was looking through all the photos I had taken along the way, and I noticed that the tourists out at Old Faithful that you heard about in part one of this series, I noticed that they were just incredibly wacky and fascinating. So I made this photography book out of their portraits, and it's called People Watching Magazine. Head over to the Here Be Monsters website, take a look at it. It's pretty inexpensive. It looks really great, and it's one of the best ways you can help to keep Here Be Monsters on the air. So head over to hbmpodcast.com. Find the button at the top of the page with the word store on it. Click that, and you'll be able to find it real quick. The sounds you heard on the show today were both personal recordings and sounds from the fine community of recordists over at www.freesound.org. Music on the show this week from Lucky Dragons, Nim, Swamp Dog, and Flower Petal Downpour. There's now a new way to listen to Here Be Monsters. You can find it over at Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher, if you don't know about it already, is this really great way to listen to new podcasts on your mobile phone. It's a free app for Android and iOS that lets you listen to and rate podcasts. It will even suggest other shows similar to Here Be Monsters that you might like. So download the app, and in the little search bar, just type in Here Be Monsters, and you can listen to all the episodes right there on your mobile phone. There are more great episodes of Here Be Monsters in the works. You can keep up with all the developments, read more about the show, and connect with other fans over at facebook.com/HereBeMonstersRadio. Thanks for listening. So there's just this really brief afterword that I want to share with you about the trip. One day I ran into New Age Mike at the radio station that we both volunteered at in college. I said, "Mike, it's so good to see you." And he said, "Jeff, it's good to see you too." And I said, "Mike, I really appreciate you loaning me that necklace while I traveled. I don't know if I believe in magic or energy or whatever it is, but it really helped out a couple times to know that someone was thinking of me." And I said, "I really appreciate you doing that, and I actually have it here with me. I'd like to give it back to you." And he looked at me and he laughed a bit and he said, "I can't take that back from you. That's yours now to give to someone else who's headed out on a journey of their own to help them when they need it." And I was feeling just a little bit guilty or strange just because I didn't really want to, like, take this prized possession from Mike. And I think he saw where my mind was going, and he smiled and he pulled down the top of his shirt just a little bit. And I saw the necklace around his neck, and I said, "Mike, how did you get that?" And he said, "Jeff, I got a whole pile of these back at my house." That's all I wanted to share.